I next met with Dr. Ajay Gopal from the University of Washington in Seattle. And to begin, he presented a 52-year-old man from his practice.
He presented with fatigue. He was really not sure why he was so tired. He actually had a little bit of weight loss as well associated with that, and then eventually presented with a palpable inguinal lymph node, had this biopsied, found to be a grade 1-2 follicular, had a low proliferative rate, and was referred to me. We completed his staging with a PET CT scan, which showed some faint uptake in a couple of ribs. It wasn't really clear this was related to his lymphoma, but he had at least stage 3 disease, probably stage 4 if we counted those bone lesions. And because he was symptomatic, we discussed treatment options at that point, and we discussed the pros and cons of anthracycline-based therapy versus bendamustine rituximab. We reviewed the data from the STILL study and the BRIGHT study, and because he had a low-grade follicular lymphoma, we opted to go with bendamustine rituximab.
And where is he right now in his treatment?
So he completed 6 cycles, tolerated it well, counts recovered with each cycle nicely, which is certainly a point to remember when treating with bendamustine rituximab. And we could talk a little bit about some of the data from the gallium study and what that gave us a little bit of warning with that study. But his counts recovered nicely. We did a PET scan at the end. He was in a complete remission, and he's now just in follow-up.
And what happened to his symptoms?
Symptoms went away rapidly, just within a day or two of the first cycle.
And what about the lesions in the bone?
Lesions in the bone also normalized. Bone lesions sometimes can take a little bit of time to normalize, but they were FDG negative by the end of therapy.
Now, did he get rituximab maintenance?
He did not. You know, we talked a lot about maintenance pro versus con, and I would have to say, in general, I'm someone who probably doesn't use a whole lot of rituximab maintenance for follicular lymphoma, since there does not appear to be a clear survival advantage. For patients who have major complications from their underlying lymphoma and we're trying to delay that, then sometimes I will, but typically I don't use a tremendous amount of rituximab maintenance. For those where we do use rituximab maintenance, for people who are having frequent recurrent infections due to hypogammaglobulinemia, I have a low threshold to just stop rather than giving them immunoglobulin and rituximab maintenance. But it does take a conversation, and I think it's something we offer, or I certainly offer, but we discuss the risk versus benefit, pro-con.
And what about the option of rituximab alone? In what situations, if any, do you use that?
Well, I'll use it in patients that have low tumor burden. I didn't mention that this gentleman had high tumor burden based on the size and number of his lymph node sites. So low tumor burden patients will often use rituximab alone, patients with comorbidities. And frankly, there actually are patients who refuse chemotherapy and simply want to try rituximab even if they don't meet those criteria. So there are some patients who, even with high tumor burden, we might use rituximab based on patient preference.